all-source intelligence. Using the GIS-enabled magic map, we plotted targets from frontline enemy formations along the Somali plains to Taliban compounds deep in Kandahar City. This intelligence included real-time, laser-designated targeting by teams on the ground. All this took air-to-land target efficiency to a new level. Our Afghan tribal allies and our unilateral Afghan agents contributed the most to this targeting effort. They had unique access throughout the country and often within the enemy camps. These collection efforts did have glitches. Our teams in the field complained that the handheld GPS units were too complex for our Afghan sources. They were returning from recon missions with a scramble of waypoints and other unnecessary data entered into the GPS. We turned to our technicians, who retrofitted the GPS units, so our assets only had one button to press. Once our asset hit the button, the GPS marked and recorded the geo-coordinates at that location, the enemy site to be bombed. This worked. The assets infiltrated the enemy site, pushed the one button that recorded the geo-coordinates, then exfiltrated from the area and rendezvoused with their CIA ops officer, who uploaded their GPS data for our customers, the bomber pilots. U.S. Army Special Forces, having joined our CIA teams, employed laser designators to light up targets all along the front lines. The forward air controllers attached to the SF teams had real-time communication with the pilots, directing strike after strike. Our Predator UAVs, outfitted with their own laser systems, also spotted and illuminated targets for U.S. and Allied bombers. The Predator's video covered the bombings, which we combined with other reporting and then funneled into our intelligence stream for a broad range of hungry customers. They were ravenous for more intelligence. Everybody from the president to the soldier near Herat to the U.S. ambassador in Islamabad wanted more intelligence, from the specific tactical strike to the macro-strategic policy play. The Predator served a complementary and revolutionary role in this complex attack, often because we developed UAV tactics on the fly. A few days before the air campaign began, from our command center, we watched the Predator ease into range of a Soviet-made spoon-rest radar. A rudimentary 1970s radar system, it was one of the few the Taliban operated. Massey and I were with our Predator team in the command center, watching the illuminated big screen. We were surrounded by perhaps 25 people, some borrowed from other government agencies, scattered around banks of terminals. They were focused on whatever stream of intelligence contributed to this mission. They sifted, analyzed, amalgamated, and coordinated through the torrent of all-source reporting, feeding the Predator team leaders. John and I were observing, learning, and searching for new opportunities. We watched as the spoon rest radar swiveled. "It's responding, locking onto our bird," one of the analysts commented. "They will take us out. We need to evade," one of the team leaders ordered. "No, keep going," I said. "Sir, a MiG is lining up on the adjacent airfield. It's taking off." "Keep going," I repeated. We watched the MiG launch and quickly gain altitude. "What if they shoot us down?" somebody asked. "The value of the intelligence is greater than the cost of our UAV. Fly it right at them," I instructed. We watched as the radar kept turning, pinging on the approaching Predator. We saw the enemy fighter, now at altitude, turn and zip right by the Predator. The enemy pilot was going too fast to intercept our UAV. The pilot tried again and missed. He could not track our slow, lumbering, prop-driven UAV. We watched our frustrated enemy as they struggled to respond. We recorded it all, the video from the Predator covering the radar, command center, and MiG pilot. This was great intelligence. "Good job. Send everything to our military customers now. Our pilots will love it," I said. Later, Massey said, "You know, an airman with a manned or unmanned platform may not have tried that." "Tried what?" I inquired. "Probe the radar? Risk the airframe?" "Well, that's the advantage of us doing something for the first time. We don't know any better." This was the first time a UAV had been employed to provoke and record the response of an anti-aircraft system. None of this was planned. We had never considered it. We simply recognized a collection imperative and seized the opportunity. With a kinetic solution integrated into the Predators, we could do more than collect intelligence and provoke enemy responses. One bird was armed with 2 Hellfire missiles. The warhead of each Hellfire was relatively small, which afforded us the type of projectile needed in exact targeting. And our pilots were exact. From a high elevation and miles away, they could shoot a Hellfire missile through a window, hit a pickup truck, or zero out a single enemy combatant. Another Predator, unarmed, served strictly as intelligence collection platforms. We flew them as much as possible. We cranked Hellfire shots day and night. On the evening of 20 October, our unarmed Predator circled high above a long paved airstrip in southern Afghanistan. The UAV monitored the area as 200 men from the 75th Ranger Regiment parachuted onto the site and secured the area. It was a bold move to establish a logistics base in the heart of Taliban country. Resistance was very light. CENTCOM watched the same video feed that we saw. Simultaneously, a JSOC team in CH-47 Chinook helicopters launched from the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk in the Indian Ocean flew north across the desert toward Kandahar. JSOC served as the unilateral covert or black ops arm of the SOCOM. Their objective was Taliban leader Mullah Omar's compound. Our intelligence indicated Omar was not there, but other Taliban leaders might be, and at a minimum, it would serve as a blow to the enemy, attacking such an iconic site in their heartland. We flew the armed Predator ahead of the CH-47s that carried the commandos. An analyst in our command center spotted a ZU-23 anti-aircraft gun high on a ridge overlooking the flight path of the JSOC raiders. A Soviet-made, mobile, twin automatic cannon capable of rapid fire and very effective against low-flying aircraft, this ZU-23 posed a real threat. We relayed the info to JSOC. The commando team was only minutes away. "Take it out," came the reply from our JSOC liaison. Standing before the large video screen, I grimaced as the first Hellfire smacked into the rock wall just over the target. This was a rare miss when we needed a hit more than ever. "Shit," somebody muttered. Then it was very quiet in the room. If not eliminated, the enemy's weapon would have a dead bead on the JSOC raiders' intended flight path. Everybody watching the large screen knew that. The raiders could deviate from their flight path, but that could potentially place them at other risk. It would also impede their timing. I watched the Predator's video image, gently holding the ZU-23 in its crosshairs, as the second Hellfire found its mark. The initial conflagration was immediately followed by streaks of small secondary explosions. It was the 23mm ammunition igniting. This was the first time that a UAV had provided air-to-ground fire support of an airborne commando raid, or, for that matter, any type of assault. The Predator was superb at these specific tactical engagements. Of far greater importance than the technology was the intelligence team that built and managed the platform. Without them, the UAV was just a hunk of metal, wires, optics, and ordnance. I looked around the room, filled with enthused operators and technicians and analysts, a mixed bunch of civilian and military men and women. They were one hell of a team. We relayed the good news to JSOC. Minutes later, the raiders swooped by the smoldering anti-aircraft relic and onward to Mullah Omar's compound. At the site, there was minimal resistance and little of intelligence value. But broadcast worldwide, the video of U.S. commandos having their way in Kandahar, walking around Omar's compound, rocked the enemy. Our HUMINT reporting covered the Taliban's shock and outrage that U.S. soldiers could penetrate so deeply, so quickly, into the heart of their safe haven. The Taliban began to wonder, what had their AQ allies done to them? What would the United States do next? When and where? The enemy's fears were justified as our intelligence and covert action support to JSOC grew. JSOC commandos soon operated in-country with impunity. We also knew from HUMINT reporting that many Afghans welcomed the precise attacks on foreign fighters with almost no collateral damage.